This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Some of the people camped out in Occupy Wall Street may have nowhere else to go. As winter approaches and the economy heads into the dumpster, homelessness is growing in New York City. The nasty surprise is that both the state and city appear to be slashing help for the homeless in their hour of greatest need. Radio EcoShock visits the Big Apple with Giselle Routhier, policy analyst for the NYC Coalition for the Homeless. Hello, Giselle.
Hello.
Last spring, your organization released a State of the Homeless 2011 report. What did you find?
Well, what we found is that over the past year, in 2010, homelessness in New York City reached record levels. Throughout the year in 2010, over 113,500 men, women, and children slept in New York City shelters, and that includes 42,000 children. And that was the highest level recorded within a year-long period. And then what we also saw was that the average nightly census numbers among homeless folks in shelter also reached record highs in the past year as well. So in February, we saw that there were over 39,000 men, women, and children in shelters on a single night. So that's what we've been seeing over the past year. That's what we documented in our report. It has a lot to do with both the economy, but a little bit more to do with the policies of this mayoral administration and what's being done to assist the homeless.
Well, let's be clear. Absolute records are being set in total homeless people in New York, the number of homeless families and kids and more. But I did a Google search for recent news about the plight of these citizens of New York in the last month, and it showed practically nothing. Are the homeless being hidden?
I think it's more of a hidden problem, I would say, specific to New York as well. In New York City, we actually have a right to shelter. That exists in nowhere else in the country. So the majority of folks that are homeless in New York City are going to be in a shelter, which makes the problem much more hidden, even though it is still a huge problem. So you do see fewer people on the streets here in New York, although you see that as well. But because we have a right to shelter, the vast majority of people that are homeless are in shelters.
Well, Giselle, tell us more about the response to these record numbers. Let's start with the state of New York.
Well, it's more, I think I would say more of a city kind of problem that we're seeing. Specifically starting, you know, in 2005, we've seen these numbers go up. So before the economy even tanked, we started seeing the numbers of homeless families, homeless men and women going up. And that's directly related to some of the policy changes that they made on a city level. So in 2005, Mayor Bloomberg decided to cut off homeless families and individuals from gaining access to federal housing resources. So what I mean by federal housing resources are Section 8 vouchers, public housing, so the type of permanent housing that's funded by the federal government. So prior to that, homeless families would get a priority on the top of the long waiting list for those resources and be able to access a certain portion of Section 8 vouchers and public housing. So in 2005, the mayor stopped that, and since then, virtually no homeless families have gotten access to those resources. And what he did instead was institute these time-limited city-funded subsidies. So they've gone through several different iterations, but the latest one was called Advantage. It was time-limited to 2 years. And what we've seen since that program was put into effect was that yes, it would help families move out, but there are more and more families coming back into the shelter system after their 2 years runs out. So what we've seen since 2005 is a huge increase in the number of families that are experiencing a repeat episode of homelessness, so coming back into the system after exiting for a brief period of time. And so that has fed significantly to the numbers that naturally went up when the economy tanked. So that's sort of compounded that problem, and now we have record numbers. And at the beginning of this year, the mayor ended the time-limited subsidies as well. So we have now, for the first time ever, no program in place to help families move out of shelter, whether permanent housing or temporary. And it's causing massive problems, and we're still not quite seeing, you know, what the effect of that might be, because it was just earlier this year that they families got cut off from all subsidies. So I think what we're going to be seeing in the coming months, especially fall and winter, when we sometimes see a rise in homelessness, is that it's just going to be astronomical.
Obviously, we've just touched the surface in a deep problem in the financial capital of the world. Our guest is Giselle Routhier from the New York Coalition for the Homeless. Thank you, Giselle.
Thank you.
Polls show millions of Americans are just one paycheck away from losing their homes. Many more are already in foreclosure, being evicted, or out on the street. Lots of us worry we could be next. Could you handle it the way things are now? We continue our survey of homelessness in major cities. Jennifer Friedenbach is the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition for Homelessness. Jennifer, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think there is a connection between the Occupy San Francisco movement and the plight of the homeless?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, a lot of the folks that are involved in Occupy San Francisco are without housing themselves. And I think that a lot of folks are protesting what has happened in the financial industry and what the financial industry has done to the economy of the United States. And so folks have lost their housing, folks are out of work, folks are really struggling, and they don't see the response they'd like to see. And a lot of things go back to the financial industry's fault.
Right. The homeowners didn't get bailed out. They just got the dirty end of the stick.
Right, exactly. And in fact, interestingly enough, the same sector also funded laws in San Francisco that made it illegal to sit and lie on San Francisco sidewalks. They funded those campaigns. The last campaign, about 70% of the funding came from the financial sector. We also have the financial sector in places like Wells Fargo funding the creation of private prisons in the United States. We also have a lot of price gouging going on for people who are just regular customers of banks that's hurting people economically. And there's just a lot of stuff going on. We have the cities are in a situation where they're making cuts to social programs that impacts homeless people and other low-income people. And oftentimes the localities are making cuts because their pension funds are losing money, or alternatively, usually both, they got really bad loans from the financial industry for bonds that were issued. And so there's a lot of push to try to renegotiate those bonds so that then the city can save money and stave off cuts to social services. So it's all very much connected.
It's one big circle. And could you explain for us this sit-lie-buy law? How did it come about, and what does it really mean for people who have no home?
Well, you know, really, from our perspective, it was put on the ballot. There's in San Francisco, like a lot of big American cities, homelessness is used as political football for folks who are running for office. And there, it's also used locally as a wedge issue on the ballot to try to drive more conservative voters to the poll and impact elections. And we believe that's why sit-lie was put on the ballot, was one of our districts that could have gone either way, liberal or conservative, and was up for re-election, and we've always believed that that's why it was put on the ballot. It basically means 30 days in jail on the second offense for anyone sitting or lying on sidewalks in San Francisco, and it doesn't require a witness, and it does not require, of course, a crime to be committed. So from a civil rights perspective, it's a very problematic law. Interestingly enough, there's been talk of using it against the protesters, and the chief of police decided actually that they were not going to use it against the protesters, that they're going to selectively enforce the law. So in other words, they're using it against people who they deem to be sitting or lying on the sidewalk because they're too poor to afford a place to live and they would be in violation versus people who are there because they're in protest. So it's pretty problematic from a civil rights perspective.
Is that 24/7 or are there certain hours where you can't just sit down?
It's time specific. And so there's other laws. There's actually 33 laws that are on the books that target poor people. And some of them are state laws and some of them are local laws. But yeah, that was our sit-lie law was number 33.
Are there more homeless people in the Bay Area as the economy fails to recover?
There is, absolutely. We have in San Francisco, we have the highest wait list for shelters for families that we've ever had. It reached a high point last week, in fact. And we have, you know, about half as many more single adults than before looking for housing. The interesting thing is about, in both the families and the folks who don't have kids, about 60% of them are homeless for the first time. So we have people who, you know, that are newly homeless that have never experienced this before. They're mostly all poor people. You know, I mean, this kind of idea that for folks who have access to accumulated wealth, they're likely not going to become homeless. And more likely, it's going to be low-income working-class people who don't have access to accumulated wealth, who don't have families that, you know, have large houses that they can move into when times get tough.
Well, if this happens all of a sudden to somebody, and it can, you just suddenly come home and you're evicted, what is a person to do? What are the first steps that a person could take?
Well, I think the most important thing for folks is to try to stay in their housing, of course. It's much more difficult once you lose your housing. So to do that, there's oftentimes local programs that'll give rental assistance. And part of the Obama stimulus package, the first one around, was this program that does homeless prevention over a longer period of time. So let's say you're out of work for 9 months, they'll help you pay your rent during that time. There's programs that people should check with their municipal government, try to stay in housing. I think the other thing to do is to really reach out and be resourceful, you know, reach out to everyone you know and find out if folks can help you out. And I think that our culture has kind of isolated us from one another, and this idea that we all kind of stand independently, but, you know, folks are willing to help and are happy to do it oftentimes. And so that's what folks should keep in mind as well. There may be local shelters, et cetera, that folks can access, but I think the more immediate thing is to stay in your housing. And I mean, if you can't stay in your housing, to be resourceful with your own network and reach out to families and friends about folks who can put you up.
And I guess if that doesn't work, your other resource is other homeless people who will tell you where you can get a meal and where you can get by.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in different localities, they have different resource lists and different systems on how to access shelter, et cetera. But, you know, a lot of that information can be available electronically on the web in most municipalities.
And you mentioned that families are having to wait to get into a shelter. How long are they having to wait? And it's hard for me to picture this. What does a single mother with three kids do while waiting for a shelter? Where are they living?
In San Francisco right now, it's about a 6 to 9 month wait. So what families are doing is, you know, they're moving from place to place. You know, they'll move in with for a few nights with some friends, maybe a few nights in a hotel, maybe a few nights with family, and just keep trying to put different things together, sometimes sleeping in their cars. So yeah, folks really, it's really destabilizing. Unfortunately, a lot of times the families end up splitting up. So maybe the kids go stay with someone and then the parents have to stay somewhere else. That's a pretty typical situation. Sometimes for single women, they have to make choices around, you know, stay in places that are not always very safe if they're a single mom. And that's a very uncomfortable, terrible decision that folks are faced with. So it's really traumatizing. It's a very, very difficult situation. And, of course, because, you know, human beings are, you know, we're not meant to live outdoors. We're meant to, you know, we really have this natural tendency towards home. And it's really incredibly traumatizing for people.
How many homeless school children are there in Frisco, and how are they coping?
We have close to 2,000, and so that would be school-aged, registered in our public schools. I know that there's been some national numbers that the numbers are pretty staggering nationwide, and they really are going up and up because the school districts keep track of, you know, how many kids they have without housing in their district. So it's really a tough situation. And it's, you know, when we have families that are in this situation and then get housing, they talk so much about the difference it has made for their kids in terms of their ability to succeed at school and what the family relationships are like, and every part of the life just is totally transformed when they have safe and dignified housing to live in. So it really does impact kids in a lot of ways. You know, for really little kids, maybe, you know, there's a lot of kids don't reach their developmental milestones if they don't have a place to live. So, you know, you think about kids crawling at a certain age, you know, about 7 months to 9 months, and starting to walk at 1 year. And if you don't have a home and you're constantly in a stroller all day, every day, and you're moving around, those developmental milestones just don't get hit. And education, the same kind of impact. So kids really struggle with it. It's really very destabilizing for them.
Jennifer Friedenbach, local newspapers have run horror stories about panhandling in the city. What is your take?
You know, this is another one of those election things. We've been doing a ton of outreach. We've been talking to everybody that's involved in the panhandling, you know, panhandlers and street performers and all kinds of folks, and nobody has noted an increase in panhandling. So we kind of think of it as an election ploy. We see it. We have a mayoral election coming on right now. Typically, we would see an increase in panhandling with an economic downturn. We haven't found any evidence of that, you know, but that's the sign of poverty in any country, in any culture, place in the world. You're going to basically be able to see what level of poverty exists in a society by the numbers of panhandlers. It's a very common indicator. And so, you know, in San Francisco, we have a pretty high level of poverty. We have half of our school children in San Francisco are having free or reduced lunch, which means that they're living below the poverty line. And living below in the poverty line in San Francisco, which is a very expensive city to live in, both food and rent and other cost of living indicators, is a real struggle. So, you know, we have a very affluent city, but really we have two cities. We have extremely poor people and extremely affluent people.
Yeah, that's sort of what Occupy Wall Street is about, I think, for sure. How is San Francisco doing when it comes to providing supportive housing as a long-term solution for homeless people?
I think San Francisco's been pretty good in terms of really trying to ensure that a large amount of the general fund goes towards creating supportive housing. And that ends up, from a fiscal perspective, a very smart thing to do, because you save so much money in emergency costs and criminal justice costs and all these other kind of societal costs. So it's actually a lot less expensive for folks to be in housing than to be out on the streets for a municipality. So emergency room visits alone, because of what happens to somebody if they're living outside, colds turning into pneumonia, infections turning into loss of limbs. I mean, all these things, it really is very costly. So that we're pretty smart about it. We're nowhere near meeting the need. The homeless crisis, of course, was caused by the federal government's massive cuts, especially previous to 1983, and we reached our lowest point in 1983, and our first shelters opened up around the country. And since then, our homeless population has only grown because we really haven't invested in the housing that we had after the New Deal. And so that steady deterioration of housing, of affordable housing, has led to, and that and the growing disparity between wages and rents, has grown to this crisis that we're facing. So till the federal government really gets serious about solving the problems and making a commitment to the very basic human right of housing, localities are going to continue to struggle with this issue.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Jennifer Friedenbach, Executive Director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Jennifer, I think we're doing pretty well here. Do you have some more time? We could keep going?
Sure.
Okay. Well, in New York City, we found up to 40% of the young homeless aged 18 to 24 were partly there due to gender issues, being lesbian, gay, or transgender. Should we presume that's a problem in San Francisco, and what is being done to address their needs?
In San Francisco, we definitely are a mecca in terms of folks coming here who are persecuted because of their LGBT status in other areas. And when they come, you know, they're often find that there's no resources here to help them, or very little. And so we absolutely have that issue here in San Francisco of young people who, you know, they don't have the family or, you know, the support system in place to help them, you know, and young people really need that, especially nowadays. It's very difficult to live independently because of that rent income disparity and the amount of income that young people are going to be able to earn. It's very difficult to afford rent. So absolutely, that's an issue here.
Jennifer, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions as we compare the rights of the homeless in San Francisco to other cities. Please try to give me a few fast answers if you can, even yes or no if that works. Are you ready?
Sure.
Is it legal for a homeless family to sleep in a public place in San Francisco?
Yes. It's illegal.
It's illegal?
Yeah.
Okay, can't do it. Is there anywhere in San Francisco area where homeless people can legally pitch a tent to live in?
No, there's nowhere legally they can pitch a tent to live in.
Okay. Is it legal to sleep in a car or camper in San Francisco?
It is illegal.
Cannot do that either. So if I'm found sleeping in a car, the police officer will ask me to do something else.
Exactly.
Okay. Does San Francisco have public washrooms accessible to the homeless?
It has some, but very limited.
Do we know how many homeless people in San Francisco are found dead on the streets each winter?
We stopped doing the count several years ago. The City Department of Public Health decided to stop doing it for political reasons, but usually by word of mouth, we find at least 100.
Can a homeless person vote in state elections?
Yes.
Can the homeless vote in city elections?
Yes.
And final question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the San Francisco police if 10 is where officers protect the homeless and 1 is the homeless are generally harassed or even beaten by the police? Your rating of San Francisco police?
Probably around a 3 or 4.
Well, Jennifer, let's get back to more extended issues. I began by pointing out in these uncertain times, anybody could lose their job. You've mentioned that it's mostly poor people. Are you seeing some middle-class people who are surprised that they just don't have any options now?
We see some. That is not going to be as typical. I mean, I think folks who, for example, folks who are middle-class but maybe had steady income but didn't come from a legacy of accumulated wealth, maybe they were the first one in their families to get a college degree or, you know, this kind of thing, and they really don't have a lot to fall back on. You know, middle class is kind of a mushy word, and so we're never really sure what that means. But certainly most people who are homeless are, you know, are work, what we would consider working class, folks who definitely spent most of their life working but probably at lower wage jobs that don't have a lot of stability.
Well, Jennifer, just give me a minute to talk about a problem which relates to corporate greed and the Ponzi housing crash. This homeless crisis in the U.S. all sounds a little crazy to an outsider. California has a record number of empty houses. Most of them are ultimately owned, or at least the mortgage is guaranteed by the federal government agency like Fannie Mae. And we have crowds of people with kids out on the street while thousands of homes sit empty. Do you think America will figure out a solution to that?
I think we can. I think we absolutely can. And I think that with political will and with a commitment at the federal level, we could solve this housing crisis relatively quickly. And we could have even done it with 30 days of Iraq war spending, for example. We could have housed every man, woman, and child through the rest of their lifetimes just with the amount of money we spent in 30 days. So it really is a matter of political will. And I think for the United States, it's an incredibly important issue that we make sure all of our people are housed.
Well, that leads to the question, why do we tolerate homelessness?
You know, our political system really, you know, has favored greed. And we have a situation where, you know, in the United States, greed rules in so many different ways. And we really need to change that around, where we come from a place of human rights. We come from a place of dignity and mutual respect for all human beings.
Well, back on working with the homeless, what are your priorities for the coming winter for the people in San Francisco?
Well, for us, we're working on identifying empty buildings. We're going to try to, you know, hopefully get them turned over to families and other homeless people. Certainly our priorities is we're trying to get another shelter opened up. We are also working hard to make sure that the civil and human rights of people who are forced to remain on the streets are upheld.
Please give us your website address and tell us how we can help.
So you can get a hold of us through cohsf.org. So that's the initials for Coalition on Homelessness, sanfrancisco.org, and that's our website. And folks can help. Certainly, if you're local to San Francisco, you can get involved in our struggle. We are supported totally by individual donations, very small foundation support, and folks can subscribe to our newspaper, The Street Sheet, and get it mailed to them. They can also give us donations online.
Is there anything I missed? Something else you'd like to add?
No, just that I think that one of the things for folks to think about, and I know listeners are, you know, really disturbed by this idea of becoming homeless themselves or other folks becoming homeless. And I think, you know, we have to move from a sympathetic apathy state to a very active state. And folks can do all kinds of stuff to help. And it's really important to do that, you know, whether it's passing out socks to people or getting involved in a local struggle to create a housing bond that will house low-income people. But these are all things that people can get involved in by doing just, you know, a few hours a week to a whole lot more.
Our guest is Jennifer Friedenbach, and she's the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.